Ethan, I've done messed up.
What'd you do this time?
So I'm doing some research on a video that I'm coming up with on my YouTube channel, and it's about the Swedish biathlon team. And I was having trouble finding information about the team, so I used a VPN to switch my internet browser to Sweden. And even though I've turned the VPN off, my browser still thinks I'm in Sweden. So whenever I go to any of these websites, whether it's Google, YouTube, Facebook, it thinks I'm in Sweden and everything's in Swedish. So we'll see how long I can go living in Sweden.
Hey, I mean, maybe that's a trick. Maybe you found the men's Swedish relay team after they got lost last weekend.
All right, biathlon is back. Ethan, we're back for another week. And biathlon gave us a break by not having the races so early that it was kind of tolerable to wake up to watch the races live. Did you were you able to get any live racing in, or were you still focused on the replays?
I was able to get a few live races in this week. I was very happy for it, and I had to watch the occasional replay, but it was very exciting to watch them get into some more live biathlon.
Let's just dive right into it. The headline I think that everyone's talking about is cross-country skier convert Anna Maria Lampic from Slovenia out of nowhere comes in fifth place in the sprint. Did you see her coming, Ethan?
I did not. I was kind of expecting a similar story to Stina Nielsen, like world champion sprinter from cross country skiing, comes over kind of like same story. We didn't really see too much of her the first weekend, and I was kind of expecting her to be posting some fast ski times, but for her to break into the top five, I was not expecting that.
Yeah, and her ski time in that sprint was like considerably faster than the ski times that she had been doing on the IBU Cup. So I don't know, maybe she just got super excited by being on the World Cup and it just released a bunch of adrenaline or something. But as expected, her shooting performance is it's below standard. We'll put it politely. But that's kind of to be expected, you know? I mean, she's really only been doing this for less than a year. If she transitioned over to biathlon in the spring of this season, she's not even a full year into the sport. And then, yeah, just bursts onto the scene with a fifth place. Kind of incredible. Also, her best ranking last week on the IBU Cup was sixth. So she's already, done better than she's done on the IBU Cup in her one race.
Just really impressive. I mean, she's shot really well and prone so far, at least in the World Cup. And standing is, has some room to improve. But that's kind of the case for anyone that switches to biathlon, is standing always has a big little bit of a steeper learning curve, and if she gets there and figures it out by the end of the season, I think she could be competing for some podiums.
Yeah, it's actually really like it's incredible. She hasn't missed a shot in prone yet, which just given her background and just the way that she's coming to biathlon, I'm kind of surprised at that because shooting prone and shooting standing are so completely different. Like your goal in prone is to just be as still as you possibly can. And a lot of times I've seen athletes have a hard time transitioning because, it's hard to be able to shut your body off and really let your skeletal structure do the aiming, right? Standing is a little different. It's a little bit more of like a hunting where you're kind of trying to attack the target. So, sometimes athletes will get a little bit lucky in standing, but the fact that she's been shooting prone so well, it just goes to show you how dedicated and how focused she's been to making that transition.
Yeah, I think one if you look on realbiathlon.com and look at her ski speed so far this year, her and her like general profile section, her ski speed is legitimately off the charts. It is covering the label that labels the skiing section of the graph because it is so high compared to what they expect to be. And I think that's going to be kind of the story for the season, is how fast can she ski and how many targets can she afford to miss but still do well.
So kind of building off of that too, Real Biathlon has a search feature where you can go back and look at historical data over the years. The most dominant skier for an entire season that we've ever had was Kaisa Mäkäräinen in 2015. And she was so dominant that she was skiing, like at the end of the season, her average ski time percent back against top 10 athletes, not like the median, not the average skier, but the elite athletes, she was skiing 2.6% faster. Right now, Anna Maria Lampech is at 4.4% faster. She's almost double the amount of dominance, I guess, for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. She's almost double as fast as Mäkäräinen was able to pull together in that season. So granted, that's, you know, Mäkäräinen's stat is after 25 races. Lampich's stat is after one race. And there's been plenty of people. I think I saw in my research, there was one person who had a race where they were like 13% faster than the rest of the top 10. So, you know, this could be one race, you know, who knows, but as she continues down this path, this season, this biathlon pass, let's see if she can keep that going, you know, like she's, it really is just incredible to see how fast she's skiing. I'm almost at a loss for words because, you know, we all thought, oh, Elvira Oeberg, like, you know, head and shoulders above the rest when it comes to skiing. And then Lampich comes in and just makes Elvira look like nothing.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, it was interesting to see, you know, we've always talked about Elvira being the fastest female skier on the World Cup, and to see how much faster Lampich is, it was kind of crazy.
Yeah. So here's a question. Lampich did not start the pursuit race. And I saw an article where her coach explained she's been very busy the last few weeks because she was traveling between the World Cup and the IBU Cup. And they made an agreement and they all came to a decision that she would not perform in the pursuit. And it's better for her to have a rest day and a training day. From your perspective, was it good or was it bad that Lampich did not race the pursuit?
This is tough. But I'm going to have to agree with the decision for her not to race the pursuit, because she raced the relay, which is a whole nother type of pressure. You have the pressure of the team. You know, nobody wants to let their team down in relay. You only want to help your team and give everything you have. And I think having that experience, although she would have had gained good experience in the pursuit, that relay experience I think is going to do her more good over the course of this season in the future and give her some time to warm up to World Cup racing. So I do agree with the decision.
Interesting. I mean, I'm a little torn as well. Obviously, as a fan, I'd love to see her race, because I think we all kind of expected if she did race, she probably would have made her way to like first place by the time they came in for the first shooting, which would have just been absurd. But I think her not racing was actually a good move. And the reason is because obviously she's still struggling with the shooting. She's having a hard time. And the win that she got by coming in fifth in the sprint race, it was just, she was just riding so high. There's so much risk when it comes to coming to a new sport or making that transition. Stina Nielsen has proved it. It even took Denise Herman a few seasons to become consistent on the World Cup. You just have so much momentum riding. Like, it's almost like she's already won, you know? So why throw her into this situation where she's almost guaranteed to do very poorly? Like, it would almost, like, you already hit the lottery, you know, why are you going to put everything down on black now, you know? So it's like, take the win where you can get it. Yes, you have the relay coming up, which I have more to say about the relay. You have the relay coming up. So, and you have the whole rest of the season coming up. There's going to be plenty of more opportunity to race pursuits and race head-to-head races. But for her right now and her development, she just needs to become a good biathlete. And the best place to do that is obviously in the sprints and in the individuals. So yeah, just like become the best biathlete you can be and then performing in head-to-head competition. So kind of switching gears here really quick. The Slovenian relay team with Lampic on the team now, they're not bad. They are not bad. Ranked 17th going into the race today, and they finished 8th. And you have Polona Klemencik, who's pretty good, 25 years old, steadily improving. You have Ziva Klemencik, who's 21. And you have Lena Repnik, who, in my opinion, you heard it here first, Lena Repnik will be the overall biathlon winner in 3 years.
Wow.
She's 19 years old, and she is murdering the junior and even the IBU Cup circuit. She's still a junior, and she's murdering that level. And she has been for the last couple of years. So give it a few years, and she's going to be awesome. And if the Klemencik sisters can continue to improve, I think Slovenia is the one to watch, in my opinion. And I didn't realize it until I was looking at their team to see who Klemencik's teammates were going to be. And I was like, wait a second. Slovenia is good all of a sudden. Like, overnight, good.
That's a good point. It never like clicked and occurred to me like who these people were. But like, if you look at the results, Lampic did have 2 penalty loops in the stand. So you can take off 50-ish seconds if she gets all those spares. And then instead of being 3 minutes back, they're 2:10 fighting with Switzerland for 6, which I think if you told them that at the beginning of the season, I think they would have been stoked that they would be competing for top 6, maybe even top 5s throughout the course of the season. And it's hard to say that they're not going to do anything but improve throughout the course of the year, because it seems like at least the Lampic and the younger girl that you mentioned as well, like, are only going to keep learning and getting better as the season goes on. Yeah, I think a team to watch out for, that's for sure.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on. All right, we got a missed shot here. It's not necessarily a miss in that things are bad. It's a miss in that I'm disappointed, because my childhood hero growing up is no longer good enough to be on his relay team, and that is Tarja Bo. It's it's kind of sad, because there's been a lot of attention on Lagrid and Johannes Tingis this season. Filip Andersson is having a great year so far. Out of nowhere, Johannes Dahle reminded himself how to shoot. and then, it's just... And then you just have Christensen, who's just a rock. He's just a rock on the team.
Yeah.
And that leaves no room for Tarja Bo. And I'm a little disappointed, Ethan.
I really am too. I mean, his ski times aren't bad. He's skiing a little faster than he was last year, which is impressive, because he was still skiing pretty fast last year. The thing that's killing him is his shooting, which you never would have, picked Tarja Bo to struggle with shooting at the start of his, 10 plus year on biathlon in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Like, you would have, his total is the lowest it's been since pretty much his first full season on the World Cup, way back in 2009, 2010.
How old were you in 2009, 2010?
I was approximately 9 years old.
Yeah, I was a freshman in high school, and it just goes to show, like, how successful and the longevity that he's had. But yeah, his shooting percentage is down to 80%, where normally he's at 86, 85, 88%. So normally, you're right, he's a much better shooter than most people on the World Cup. And just suddenly this year, it's not falling into place.
I really hope he turns it around, and I guess like being able to still win and dominate relays without Tarjei Bøe, who I think is safe to say one of the most consistent and best biathletes of recent history, to be able to leave him out of your team and still be dominating the relays is really impressive in itself.
Yeah.
I think one fun fact that I learned about Tarjei Bøe just now is that in the 2008-2009 season, I don't know how many races he did. It was his first year on the World Cup. I don't know what happened, but his shooting percentage for standing was 40%. If you are listening out there and you are struggling to hit any targets in standing, there is still hope, because that next year he hit 80% on the World Cup.
Anna Maria Lampich just said that she heard your message, Ethan.
So there's always hope for you if you're struggling with shooting.
Julia Simone, she's for real, man. She's sort of emerged as our overall yellow bib leader right now. After a dominant start by Vitozzi last week, it suddenly became the Julia Simone show, with third in the sprint and a win in the pursuit. Is she the woman who is going to take the Crystal Globe this year?
As of now, it's really hard to say no. She puts herself in a great spot from the sprint to the pursuit, and then, you know, as you said, is excelled as best you can, I guess, in every single pursuit thus far. And I think, and this is going into Le Grand Bornand, where the French team always seem to kind of turn it up a few notches racing at home. I think if she has some really good races at home, like we've seen the French have in the past, I think she could have a pretty good, she could kind of have one hand on the Crystal Globe after this first trimester for sure.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, kind of the exact opposite of what we were just talking about with Tarjei. Julia Simone's shooting percentage is on another planet right now. She's been consistently throughout her career a subpar shooter, like shooting 80%, even two seasons ago, shooting 75% on the year. Not great. Suddenly, she's shooting 100% in the prone. She hasn't missed a shot prone. And following that up with above average standing is settling her at 93% shooting, which if she keeps that going for the rest of the season, I mean, that would be one of the greatest shooting percentages for an entire season ever. Mm-hmm. But I mean, she's always been a very strong skier pretty much since 2020. She's been consistently posting top 10 ski times, but yeah, it's just like she's always just been kind of failing in the shooting range, and suddenly it seems like she's snapped back. I was listening to an interview with her actually just before we got on here, and she said something like, they asked her like, oh, you know, you won, you know, all this great stuff, whatever. They're like, what was the key for that? And she said something very interesting. She said, it clicks now. And she was like, I don't know how to explain this, but shooting clicks now. And to me, with that sentence, she just earned my pick for the overall winner. Because I think there's something in every athlete's life, there's like a point where you have to come to this realization and everything sort of falls into place. I'm not saying she's not going to go through, you know, she's never going to miss a target again, but like there's this sort of awakening that it seems like she's had when it comes to shooting, and her results have shown.
I think like we've always seen her, she was missing that final piece of being able to put it together for more than, you know, more than one race in a row. And she's starting to do that. And it kind of reminds me of Johannes Tingis Boe when he broke onto the World Cup and was skiing fast. He kept skiing faster and faster, but his shooting was consistently, you know, like Julia Simone, subpar. And as soon as he figured it out, all of a sudden he was winning World Cups left and right. And the same kind of story feels like it's going on with Julia Simone. And I feel pretty confident in saying that she's going to continue this throughout the whole season. It's not just an early season wonder and she's going to fall off. I think she's going to be able to keep it going all year. And we'll see who can kind of challenge her.
Yeah, I didn't even realize this, but Simone's 26, so she's not that old. And the reason I say that is because it seems like she's been around, like, on the World Cup for a long time. Looks like this is going to be her, like, 10th or 9th season on the World Cup or so. 7th season on the World Cup. So she's definitely a veteran. Like, she has the experience and she's been there, but obviously she hasn't been able to, like, be a favorite, you know, like some of the other names that we know. So, and the fact that she didn't just burst onto the scene like an Elvira Oiberg is kind of like, oh yeah, you know, Simone's been around, like she's, you know, she's maybe plateaued, she's reached her peak. But I think, you know, now that you consider that she's also still kind of young, but she just had a lot of experience early on, like maybe she's starting to come her own, you know, come into her own, and she will be that consistent, more focused competitor. And I mean, we've seen it like all every year in the summer. She always does really well in the summer races, like the Blink Festival and the Martin Fourcade Festival. And it just never really translates to the winter. But maybe this is the year it finally clicks.
It's hard to think that if Elvira Oiberg can start hitting a few more targets, that she can't, you know, keep finishing in the podium and keep skiing as fast as she is, that she can't challenge Julia Simone in some races. But other than Elvira, who's already almost 100 points back on Julia Simone, no one has kind of had a super consistent streak or been able to have ski speed that's close to Simone to battle it out on those last laps. I think Simone kind of has the edge over almost anyone in that top 10. Do you think anyone in the top 10 will make it a challenge?
I mean, if Elvira Oiberg can get her shooting back together, I think she has a chance. I was also really impressed with Markéta Davidová this weekend with a second and a third, two podium performances. Yeah, I mean, with this new point system, again, it's like all you need is one person to have a good weekend. And last weekend, it was Lucia Vitozzi, and this weekend, it was Julia Simone. Next weekend, it could be Denise Hermann. Or maybe the Oiberg sisters finally figure out their shooting. I think, yeah, pretty much down to like seventh place, pretty much every name I just mentioned, plus Ingrid Tandervold, who's ranked second overall. I think I could totally see any one of those women walking away with the overall. And once you start getting to Hauser, Pearson, Doro, I think you're sort of starting to leave the I don't know. I just don't think those names, I mean, they're good. Like Hauser was really solid last year, but I think they're going to continue to get good results. But I don't know, something about them right now, that it just isn't screaming consistent. And when you want to win the overall, you need to be consistent. And so far, those top six women, top seven women have showed they're consistently up there, and their bad days aren't that bad. Over on the men's side, I mean, it's totally different story. Dare I say, biathlon's getting kind of boring on the men's side? Because Johannes Tingisbo is running away with this, and like the only person who is within spitting distance of him is his teammate, Sturla Holm-Ligrid. And even the Bo versus Ligrid battle, to me, it's no contest. Like, Johannes Tingis just looks so strong on the skis. His shooting has been lights out, even with his, you know, mistake fire in the prone in the pursuit today. he literally gave everyone else in the field 25 seconds, and he still blew the competition out of the water. I don't think there's anyone else on this list who is remotely close to him, not even Ligrid.
it's just like not even a contest. Like, you throw him in the third leg for the Norwegian team, and you know, boom, there's a minute, and it was like he wasn't even like hard pressed. He wasn't down on time. He didn't have to pull any time back. He just raced his race and pulled a minute on France and Sweden, who also both had really good relays. And it's just, I think, like you said, with him and Liegrid, it's not even a competition. And anyone outside the two of them, it's not there. I don't think they're going to break into that. And I think you're right that it might be getting a little boring. And I think the real races will be for that third spot on the podium and down. I don't think anyone's going to really be touching one and two a whole lot this season, except for Johannes Tingis and Liegrid.
It's definitely kind of like, it's like Fourcade a couple years ago, you know, like there is a season where Fourcade was just so dominant that he just, it almost seemed like he couldn't lose.
Yeah. Here's a question for you. For the entire season, what shooting percentage do you think Johannes Tingis Bo can afford to get by with and still be able to ski himself to win the overall?
80% maybe.
Yeah. It's kind of right around where I was thinking too.
I mean, I've said this many times, the World Cup standard's about 85%. And you know that most people in the top 10 are probably doing better than that. But yeah, he's just been skiing so freaking well that I think 80%, like, cause I mean like, last year was kind of weird because he didn't really race the whole season, but the season prior, he shot 85%, and that was actually kind of down on his career average. Two seasons ago in 19-20, he shot 92%, which is crazy. Because when you think of Johannes Tingis, you always think of him being a fast skier. But he's proven in the past that he can shoot like mid-90s, which is funny because that's all that Liegrid really had going for him. Like, I mean, Liegrid's a fast skier. He's shown that. But I think I always consider Liegrid to be a better shooter and a very consistent shooter. And that's why he's always consistently towards the front, because he's not going to give away shots and give away places like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of the last couple seasons, Bo's always had some issues on the range, and it made it hard on himself, but he's always skewed his way back into it. So, yeah, like last season, his season average was 82%. Season before was 85. A couple years ago was 85. 86 with a couple, you know, 89 and 92 sprinkled in there. But that's also when he was skiing like 5% faster than the field. He's currently skiing 6% faster than the field. So he's really putting together like a perfect biathlon season right now. He's skiing faster than everyone else, shooting better than everyone else. And now it's he's the perfect biathlete right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And we talk about his ski times being so fast, and this also includes those final laps and those third laps where he's minutes ahead and does not have to push the pace at all. And I think that's crazy to me that he's still skiing this much faster than everyone, and in half the races so far has not had to ski the last lap at race pace at all.
Yeah. Regardless of Johannes Tingis Bo, do you think Liegrid has risen himself above the rest of the field? Like, do you think he's almost guaranteed to get second right now, or do you think he's still vulnerable?
I think there'll be some races when he falls below second. He's going to have some bad races, and some people are going to have some good races, and that's just kind of how the sport goes. I would be willing to put a hefty amount of money on him finishing second in the overall by the end of the season.
And then it looks like the only other challenger who sort of separated themselves from the rest of the field is Emilien Jacquelin. And then after him, there's a lot of people that are very tight. Does Samuelsson, Ponsaloma, even Hartvig, who's miraculously staying up there, Reese, we still haven't seen Fiel Maillet. Are any of these guys gonna pick it up and give Jacqueline a run for his money on the podium there, or even go after Liegrid for second?
Yeah, I have a feeling Samuelson will kind of get into the swing of things and hopefully be challenging Jacqueline for that third spot and maybe put some pressure on Liegrid. But outside of that, I just don't think anyone has been consistent enough or kind of had all the pieces to make me feel confident that they can push Liegrid for that second spot and compete for that third spot. I think Ponsaloma is just not hitting enough targets when it matters consistently.
Yeah, kind of same thing with Samuelson.
Mm-hmm. But I have more faith and more trust in Samuelson to figure it out based off of historical results.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be tough. I mean, they got to start hitting more targets. I will say that it has actually been pretty interesting to see how fast that Jacqueline has been skiing this year. He's skiing a little bit faster than Samuelson, and quite honestly, I think Jacqueline is so wild when it comes to shooting, and his shooting always seems so rushed that I have no faith in him to hit the target. But he's done so just well enough so far that he's ranked third. Whereas like Samuelson, I have confidence. He's just not hitting the target right now. And it's kind of frustrating. Mm-hmm. So I do think that as the season progresses, I don't want to say Jacqueline's going to come back into the fold. I think the rest of the field is going to start catching him. I think it's a little better, but I do think when it all is said and done, I do think Samuelson's going to sort of rise above his immediate competitors there. Here we go. Women's relay. Again, another pretty fun event. There was a lot of competition on the last loop there with Oiberg and Julia Simon, who we spoke about earlier, is she's the one to beat right now. Obviously, she's wearing a yellow bib, and Oiberg lost the lead, which was kind of crazy. And so for so long, people have been saying, or we've been saying, that Sweden is just stacked. And they are. And they didn't do that bad. They didn't have any penalty loops, but they did have a lot of spares, particularly Hanna. And yeah, they came in second. They were dethroned by France. Is this a sign of things to come, or is this just a bad weekend? We're just going to move on.
I think kind of bad weekend, move on type of deal. I think there's no way Hanna Oiberg misses or needs to use 5 spare rounds for the rest of the year. I think she can hopefully get by with 1, maybe 2. And I wonder if the 2 Oiberg sisters are under so much pressure having a suboptimal start to the season that maybe they're just trying to make it through the Christmas break and take time and reset and come back after the new year and be ready to light it up in the top 10. I think Sweden, at least on the women's side, will kind of dominate the relay, finish first or second on a bad day.
Mm-hmm. We also got to give shout out to Italy, who had a really good race coming in third. They have Vitozzi, they have Doro, both Doro and Vitozzi did very well. Doro did not use a penalty or a spare round. But I got to say the real champions of that race for them was Rebecca Posler, who started leg 1, who is 21 years old and did not use a spare round and tagged off a very competitive second place, which is, about as good as you can tag. And then Doro was able to move them into first place, tagged off to Samuela Camola, who is 24 years old, another youngster, not really a name that we know. And she was able to hold her own as well and keep the team on the podium. And, you know, she exchanged in, let's see, I want to say fourth place, I think, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. But she was right there. You know, she was only a few seconds behind Germany and Sweden mm-hmm. and France. And you hand off to Lisa Vitozzi, who at the time, or I guess going into this weekend, was the yellow bib winner. So she's your, you know, your strong mm-hmm. anchor leg. And they were able to come away with a podium placer there against a really strong German team, who I think mm-hmm. There's no reason. I mean, Germany came in second last week, so there's no reason to think that they couldn't fight for the victory in this race. And yeah, mm-hmm. Italy just had an all-round solid race because they're two youngsters. I'm going to say they overperformed. They did, I think, way better than anyone expected.
Mm-hmm. I think we've kind of been waiting for the time and the day that Doro and Vitozzi have those two other pieces that make them competitive. Passler and Camola could be those two pieces. Like you said, they held their own. They did more than that. They kind of overperformed expectations, at least the expectations that we had.
And I totally agree with you. I think we've been waiting to see if Italy could get that like third person. And for the long time it was Sanfilippo, but she wasn't a strong third person. Mm-hmm. And their fourth person was always just horribly weak. And then now we know that there's a good group of younger athletes coming up through the Italian pipeline. And I think it's like, you may have heard on Eurosport, they're talking about it. They're called the Cortina generation because they really want to perform well in 8 years at the Cortina Olympics. So there's a really strong group of juniors who are coming through the pipeline right now. And Passler is definitely one of them. And, yeah, it was kind of like, you know, when are these youngsters going to break onto the scene? Because you have these examples of Elvira Oiberg and Ingrid Tandervold. Like, they can kind of pop up to the World Cup and just start doing very well immediately. And Passler, she's had a few World Cup starts, but has not had that, like, breakthrough performance. And I don't think she's even there yet, considering, you know, she has two top 20 results this year. But yeah, if she can keep coming in like 20th place consistently, she's going to be a very strong third piece to that Italian relay team. And then suddenly, yeah, the Italians become a factor because I don't, you know, maybe France on a good week, but I think even on a normal week, I don't even think France has four solid picks like Sweden does. So I really think between France, Germany, mm-hmm. Norway, and then now Italy, hopefully. Like, I think that's going to be a really strong fight for second place overall.
And I like the point you made up about like getting these juniors ready to compete in the coming years with hosting the Olympics soon. And we've kind of heard about it for a long time. And we haven't really seen it pay off or work out just yet. And I wonder if this is kind of the tip of the iceberg. And I wonder if it's going to pick up and we're going to see a few more of them come through. And maybe we'll have kind of a new era of Italian biathletes.
Oh, I really think so. Passler, who's 21. Hanna Auchinteller, Linda Zingerli. That for the women, and then on the men's side, it's that generation of Didier Benoz, Tommaso Giacomel, who had an incredible pursuit this week. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they've pinpointed like 6 to 8 junior athletes, most of who are on the IBU Cup right now and doing very well on the IBU Cup. But I think, yeah, they've pinpointed some of these younger athletes, and they see them as their Cortina generation, and those are the guys and the girls that are going to be representing Italy on home turf mm-hmm. at the Olympics. So it's names that we've seen, yeah. And right now they're not performing at a high level, but you know, Giacomel, he's been a very strong skier, came in sixth in the pursuit, consistently in the 30 to 20 range. Like, he's making the progression that you want to see if you're the Italian Federation. All right. Let's wrap this up. Spare round. Favorite new race suit. What do you got?
Is it an acceptable answer to say not really any of them? None of them are like that great.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are okay.
I feel the exact same way. When we wrote down, you know, our spare round was going to be favorite race suit, I literally was just like running through all of the suits and like none of them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with Austria. I think it's a very, I don't want to say safe suit, but it's red, it's black, it's white, it's got its national colors. It's got a little cool camo pattern in there. So I'm going Austria.
My pick was going to be Canada. I guess it's kind of almost an exact opposite of the Austrian ones with more red and a little bit of white. I just think they're simple. They didn't try to do too much. They made a change. I don't think it was a bad change. I don't think it was anything too crazy, but I don't know who is designing all these World Cup suits, but I think they need to have other people do it.
Yeah. Cool. Well, hey, man, we got through 2 weeks of biathlon, and it's only going to get more exciting from here, I think. So, if you enjoyed this, you can give us a like, and feel free to listen to this on whatever platform you get your podcast. So if you're watching on YouTube right now, you can find us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, because we are out there in the world. And yeah, so tune in next week, and we'll have another biathlon podcast for you, recapping all the action from the Biathlon World Cup. But until next time, we'll see you.